Inside the Birds Radio is back on 97.5. The Fanatic, Jeff Mosher and Adam Kaplan. Happy to be back for year three of ITB Radio here on The Fanatic. Brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. And we will be here from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m. Monday nights all throughout the season. Of course, there'll be some Sixers-Flyers conflicts. We'll work around that. We're excited to be back. Adam, of course, we want to thank The Fanatic for bringing us back. And I got to thank the Drive Time crew of the best show ever for the killer crossover segment that we just had with Ty and Hunter Brody, Ricky Batalico, and of course Jen Scordo. So were you able to listen in?
I did. You were getting heated. Oh yeah. My goodness!
It's day after a game. We're all heated.
I know. And so what is in your crawl? Like, what is in your crosshairs? Because I know everyone the day after, they're what we call unreasonable week one post game takes.
Right.
The sky's falling. Even if your favorite team wins, in this case, mostly people who are listening are Eagle fans.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's some Cowboy fans out there, which is disgusting, but it's true. people are upset. The game shouldn't have been as close. They blew a big lead. I know some people lost bets on it. You had the Eagles. The defense collapsed in the second half. There's some interesting stuff in the first half. So what's in your crawl today?
I really don't. I did not come out of the game yesterday. And the nature of what we do as reporters and insiders is, and being objective, is that we don't like live and die. We're not at the edge of our seat. And if something goes great, we're not sitting there jumping up and down. And if something goes terrible, we're not crying in our beverages, right? But I came out of the game thinking, all in all, it's a road game. I definitely think the Lions are an improved 53. How that will manifest in their win-loss record, I don't know. Last year, they played a number of games just like Sundays. They were in a lot of games last year, just not against the Eagles. So they haven't exactly gotten over that hump yet of learning how to win those games. But Hutchinson gives them some talent. The coach, I loved Aaron Glenn's philosophy, at least for the week one. So I don't have, per se, an issue that I think is long term. You know, my favorite saying is week one is the biggest con job in the NFL. Last year, the two number one seeds were Green Bay and Tennessee, right? Those teams lost by double digits in week one. Green Bay lost by 35 points last year in week one. The Titans lost by 20-something points in week one. So not everything you saw that happened against the Lions that you didn't like means it's going to be like that next week or even for the rest of the year. And that doesn't mean there aren't certain things that we'll talk about, as you mentioned, whether it's run defense or the quarterback taking too many hits. But I had really nothing in my craw, but I will say it always bothers me because I think you and I both feel this way. As media members, we try to be educational for fans, for viewers, for followers. We also try to be a liaison at times between what the coaches are trying to say and what the fans should understand. It does bother me, and Doc Rivers does it worse than anyone, when coaches say things that are clearly misleading and trying to bury a narrative that might actually be true. So when Nick Sirianni said today that there was no correlation between the Eagles' run defense when Jordan Davis was on the field as opposed to when he was off the field, when all of the metrics and the numbers suggest that there certainly was causation and correlation, that bothers me a little bit. But I can't say that I'm not used to coaches kind of trying to gloss over the actual truth in their press conferences, Adam.
Yeah, Sirianni is inconsistent with, I would say, telling the truth. There's some times we all know the real answer. He just doesn't want to give it because he doesn't want to embarrass a player, which I fully understand. I remember, this is going back some years, so I had a report that this is when Chip Kelly was the head coach of the Eagles, that DeMarco Murray was going to get PRP treatment for his hamstring.
Mm-hmm.
Chip said it was false. Okay, so I guess he was asked at his press conference, and he said it was false. I later learned that Chip was covering for Murray. He didn't want the truth to be out because it was Murray's information. He was just trying to cover for him. Okay, I get that. That's mm-hmm. It's his own personal information. That's fine.
Yes.
I just didn't like the way he did it, but okay.
Sure.
You know, I knew what the truth was, so it didn't really matter. But here, when you have statistics that could back it up, I know, listen, with Jordan Davis, if you listen to our show, Inside the Birds, our podcast, we told you he wasn't going to play a ton this season. He's just not going to play a ton. He's very raw. He's talented.
Right.
If you thought he's going to play a ton, you just don't understand the player. You haven't studied the player. He needs a lot of work.
Yeah, he didn't even play a ton at Georgia.
Right. Last year he didn't. No, he didn't. That's exactly right, and that's part of it. He also has to be in much better shape. He's getting there. I mean, the weight's kind of where they want it, but your weight's one thing. Conditioning is another. So he's a guy that's got a lot of talent in him, but he's very raw and needs to get techniques correct.
Mm-hmm.
The techniques at this level are completely different from what that you're taught at Georgia. So he needs a lot of work, but the hope is this season that'll help him against the run. And that's, yesterday was stunning. I know DeAndre Swift is very talented.
Yep.
But the way he gashed them, and these weren't small holes. You could have gotten 10 yards against this Eagles defense yesterday.
Yeah, and so, listen, I don't, you know, there's this kind of topic floating around, like, our fans, our media, too negative after wins. Don't you just enjoy the wins? And I try not to take a side on that. I think that there's very many times there's reasons to be skeptical or pessimistic, even in victory, if it's something that you've seen repetitively. If you go back to last year, the Eagles won the first game. Everybody was excited. Then they lost the next three in a row. And wasn't their next win the Carolina win, which was really an ugly win? I mean, it was. They did not do a lot of things well in that game, but they blocked a punt, and Carolina did not do a lot of things well in that game either. So it was a win, but I remember a lot of people did not feel good about it. And when we came on the Monday after, the tone was, that didn't really make, that was not fun to watch. That was very, like an eyesore game. And I can't blame anybody for feeling that way. Just like I won't crack on anyone that says that they're concerned about the defense and not necessarily about it, but the philosophy. And so I was talking to a source who had seen the tape, you know, and watched the game. And this personnel source said to me, well, Adam, was that, the perplexing thing about how the Eagles came out in that game is that they had to know that the Lions were going to try to run the ball down their throats. The strength of that offense is the running backs and the offensive line. And even though the Eagles have a good defense, the Lions are at home, they're rocking, they got all the momentum. Why wouldn't you put a guy like Jordan Davis out there earlier to try to have a better run defense so that you can take him off the field because you're putting the offense in passing situations by stopping the run? And that part is perplexing, and it's fair to wonder and ask about. And given what we saw last year with Jonathan Gannon taking kind of 5 or 6 weeks to change up his scheme when things were bad, I understand why people might be upset about that.
Just to understand something, here's a little learning point for our listeners. When you think a player is going to play a lot and he doesn't, it's strictly because the coaches don't trust the player to play a lot of snaps. If they trusted him, he'd be in there more. That's just the way it works. I've covered this business 20 years. It never changes. If the coaches trust young players, they play a lot of snaps. If they don't think they're ready, they don't. There's no gray area.
Right.
So if you thought he was going to play a lot, you clearly have not been paying attention. He's not ready. He may be later in the season. He's got a long way to go. I just think what happens is, and I get it, we're certainly guilty of that sometimes. You see an incredible talent. The Eagles traded up for him. They gave a lot to get him. It doesn't mean that he's going to be ready year one. That's not the way it works. You just don't throw a guy out there.
He's not ready, correct.
He's not ready. He's clearly not ready for a lot of snaps. Now, maybe later in the season, they feel that he is, but he's not. That's just, I think we need to get more realistic when we build a player up, because this is like a generational talent. He can do this or that or the other. Yeah, maybe someday he can, but he can't yet.
Right.
You've got to be careful with that.
So he played, what, 22% of the snaps, right? And I'm sure, because the team is very heavily, I mean, every team is heavy into analytics and sort of figuring things out prior to the game, the way kind of baseball games are sort of scripted. How many pitches a guy's going to throw? When do you bring in a certain batter? When do you bring in a certain pitcher for which inning? If Jordan Davis is only going to play 20% of the snaps to start, they've got to figure out, well, when are the best usage of that 20% of the snaps? Maybe in their minds they thought, if we throw him out there the first 2-3 series, that means that's X number of series we will not be able to use him in the second or third. What if it's a close game in the fourth? We need him for goal line. We need him for third. I'm not making excuses. I'm just kind of giving people an idea of how the coaches think this through from Monday through Saturday before they come in with a game plan Sunday. But again, if you felt like the Lions were going to come out that heavily in a run game, I was surprised that it took three possessions before they actually put Jordan Davis on the field. But I also understand what they're saying when they say there's no correlation. I think that's his way, Nick Sirianni's way of saying, don't make all of our success or failures against the run about Jordan Davis's presence or non-presence. We have other guys on the defensive line who absolutely should be able to stop the run or help plug a gap when Jordan Davis is not in there. Let's not alleviate them from their responsibilities as well.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, the thing that's surprising, you and I talked about Marlon Tuipulotu in the preseason, that he's definitely going to make the team. He's a guy that they really liked.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, for him to play 42% of the snaps, Davis played 32%, only 22 snaps. Tuipulotu played 29 snaps. But if you saw him a lot in the first half, he got a good push in the middle of the pocket. Like, that's, he's underrated with that ability. And he played over, he more or less played over Jordan Davis. That was a, that part was a little surprising. I didn't see that happening.
But
they liked Tuipulotu. Last year, we're told he had a severe hamstring injury in training camp. He was never good enough shape, so he never really played. And when he played, he wasn't ready. Clearly, he shouldn't have even been playing. But he looked good in training camp. He clearly earned a spot. In fact, he probably earned it by middle of August. It was pretty much over. He was going to be on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a guy, look, he played, you know, over a third of the snaps, so they clearly, they like him. But, man, the run defense yesterday, save maybe a play here or there in the first half, it was horrendous. That was surprising how bad they were yesterday with that.
Very much so, and you can't make it all about Jordan Davis. There's got to be gap in tech. I mean, Fletcher Cox has been in this league for a long time. Javon Hargrave has been in this league for long enough. Brandon Graham's a good run-stopping defensive end. Josh Sweat, your linebacker. TJ Edwards is, you know, their best downhill linebacker by far. And honestly, a lot of those missed tackles came from the back end as well. I mean, there you saw Kazir White arm tackling a few people. You saw Chauncey Gardner-Johnson and Marcus Epps not do a great job. That, to me, is what I think Nick Sirianni was getting at when he said no correlation. He should have used better phrasing, unless I'm just putting words in his mouth. But the point is that a lot of those bad tackles and bad form came from the back end. And that's got to improve. You got Dalvin Cook coming in here on Monday. So that's going to be in a great running game along with two pretty good weapons there and a good quarterback. So they obviously are going to have to play a much better branded defense if they want to hold down the Minnesota Vikings. But again, you know, you can't just look at everything that happened in week one and project that that's the way it's going to be. And then there were positives. We'll get into the show. The phone number is 610-632-0975. Please, we anxiously await your calls. All of our new subscribers on Patreon, by the way. We have a Patreon channel. It's patreon.com/InsideTheBirds. You can sign up, become a subscriber. We're doing extra podcasts, extra shows, prizes, giveaways, chats on Discord for everybody who subscribes to our Patreon accounts. It's a growing community. Get involved, and we also will answer your questions here, when we're here on the Fanatic, too.
Probably Wednesday night. Yeah, I'm probably going to do my first chat. Probably do like a half an hour for our Patreon people.
Awesome.
I look forward to doing that because, man, people listen to the station today. I have to tell you, I get it. You're growing up here, there's this fascination with Buddy Ryan. Everybody wants to be aggressive. I totally understand. Jonathan Gannon's not like that. He runs an execution-style defense. That means you're going to flood zones. You're going to take passing lanes away, which, by the way, they did a great job of for those three series in a row where they got off third down. And then they played very soft in the second half. And Jared Goff, if you don't get in Jared Goff's face, so Jared Goff really struggles when you get near him. He does not do well with bodies near him. He just doesn't.
Right.
And that's why they came back. But you saw what happened when they played their cover four, their matchup zones very well. And they were really tight. And then when they didn't, when they played a lot of off coverage and let guys run free, like Amon-Ra St. Brown, they got back into the game. And that also will be a learning experience for Jonathan Gannon. He has to do a better job. It's inexcusable that they almost blew that game. And, you know, the fourth quarter, the Eagles didn't score. And the Lions scored, not only did they score 14 points, it almost looked like, a little bit like the Miami choke that they had, the picket fence game.
Oh, sports, God.
Which was awful.
I have nightmares of picket fence defense, man. Like, nightmares. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of Eagles fans
Jim Schwartz, too. Right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, jeez.
It started to look bad, man. The room that they were giving these receivers.
Right.
Like, for a change, the Eagles had the worst defense last year against tight ends. They actually did a good job against Hockenson.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, DJ Chark's touchdown catch was amazing. Swift started to become more of a factor. In fact, how about them running when they're down 17?
Yeah, and Nick Sirianni tipped the cap to them. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Well, listen, they cater to their strengths. You know, we'll talk about the Eagles' offense a little bit as well today because I know a lot of people have questions. But the Eagles cater their offense to their strengths. And the Lions did the same thing. They have a good offensive line. I don't know if it's a great offensive line. They got a lot of love in the preseason. It's a good one, though. And they have very good running backs. I mean, obviously, they have more talented running backs in this matchup than the Eagles do. And DeAndre Swift is a stud. And they know that, as you said, Jared Goff is best when he has offensive balance, like he was with the Rams. And they had a good, strong running game with Todd Gurley. So they're not afraid to spring a run when you're not expecting it. You know who did that really, really well? Doug Peterson used to run on third down all the time, quite often. Spread it out, hand it off up the middle, take advantage of your offensive line in that space, surprise the defense that's in a nickel or a dime, and bam, you get the first down. So Doug Peterson used to do that. And you do have to, if we're going to be fair, when the Eagles steamroll an opponent, like they did to, say, not just the Lions last year, but like a good team like the Saints, when they do that, we say, man, you know, you got a great offensive line, you got a quarterback who knows how to run, and you got running backs who are all pretty good. That's a good recipe. Well, the Lions, that's their strength. So at some point, we should not be surprised that they ran the ball well. They have very good run game personnel. Now, I'm not saying that we're overreacting. You have to be better against the run, especially in obvious run situations. But I am saying that the Lions, that is their strength, and you have to expect them to win some snaps on their end as well.
Yeah, look, but the thing is, it can't be so bad you're almost non-competitive against it. Swift, it's one thing to get a 3-5-7 yard run, but the gap that you had between the A and B gap sometimes, I could not believe the room that he had to run.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad. It was really embarrassing. And they got to clean things up here. That was definitely something that the gap control. In fact, the Eagles have a pretty good run defense. Usually they got off to a slow start last year with Patterson, of all people. Cordell Patterson won him a career year. He became a running back finally, and it did. And he also did well yesterday against the Saints. But they'll clean this up. That stuff's easily corrected.
Yep.
But man, the plays that the Lions were getting in the passing game, that surprised me because they had Goff pretty stymied in the first half.
So it sort of like became the lost conversation, didn't it? I mean, there's been so much emphasis on the lack of run defense that what's gone sort of covered up. And I've heard some people, I mean, it's been discussed, just not as much, is that the Eagles did not get a lot of pressure. For a team that kind of built its defense around front four pressure, and it was very deep on the defensive line, although it took a hit today, we'll get into that next segment. But for a team that's bread and butter is supposed to be hitting the quarterback, you brought Hassan Reddick in, you've got Josh Sweat, you have Javon Hargrave, you have Cox, you have Grant. I mean, that was supposed to be their calling card on defense, and they really did not. What was it? The one sack was a botched snap that Goff had to like kind of bend down and pick up. So it almost doesn't count. There was not enough pressure on Jared Goff. That, to me, is a little bit more alarming and surprising than maybe even the run defense, which I agree with you, is probably can be corrected easier.
Yeah, I mean, look, and then he can't give so much room as they gave in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
That was a major problem. That was the lack of adjustments. The thing that they have to do is they got to take advantage of the talent they have. Because last year, everyone was blaming Steven Nelson. That was the guy that everyone pointed the finger to. You know, Gannon couldn't coach like the way he wanted. Okay, fine. I'll accept that. But this year, I'm not accepting it.
You can't. Yeah, no excuses.
They've got the talent here. Now you got to do better.
Yeah, I mean, look, there was an upgrade at every single level. From the front line with Reddick and Jordan Davis to the mid-interior with Kazir White and N'Kobe Dean to the back end with James Bradbury, Chauncey Gardner. There's no excuses. I mean, this is a defense that's got to be a lot better and should be a lot better. I suspect they'll be better. I think, as you just said, Jonathan Gannon's got some things to figure out and learn. Hey, by the way, he did blitz, by the way, in this game. Not a ton, but he showed
safety
you
corners.
Safety blitzes, cornerback blitzes. So it's not like he's completely unable to change, or now that he's got his personnel, I think he can do more things. I just think you're right. Once this team, the secondary especially, gels a little bit, gets to know each other, I think he's got to do some of the stuff he prides himself on, which is being confusing and mixing coverages and showing one thing prior to the snap, yet another thing after the snap. That is what he has said works in the NFL. It's about confusing the quarterback, and you're absolutely fair to say that Jared Goff was not confused at all in the second half of the game. He knew he wanted to throw it to, and not only was he not confused, he wasn't harassed or hit very often either, and that's a little bit concerning. Also a concern, as we get to the break here, the Eagles just took a hit already on their defensive line. We'll get into who went down, who's going to replace him, and a very odd way that they have to figure out that replacement when we take this break. So for Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher, you're listening to Inside the Birds Radio here, brought to you, of course, by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. We'll be right back.
97.5 The Fanatic. 97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, Inside the Birds Radio with Adam Kaplan and Jeff Mosher back here on 97.5 The Fanatic, and of course brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. It is 6:30, so that means it's the 6 o'clock hour. It's brought to you by Family & Company Jewelers. Visit them on Route 70 in Marlton or at familyjewelers.com, South Jersey's diamond destination. Well, the injuries have started a little bit early for the Eagles, which kind of is like last year when Seumalo and Brandon Graham got hurt pretty early in the season. This time it's week one, Adam, and it's weird because he did not have a significant role at the moment, but I still consider it a significant injury because of the numbers. But Derek Barnett torn his ACL. Nick Sirianni confirmed he's going to be out for the rest of the year. And it's strange how the Eagles went into the year because of Haason Reddick and the now pass-rushing linebacker that they have. They went a little thin at defensive end, like hand-in-the-dirt defensive end. There was Josh Sweat. There's Brandon Graham. There was Derek Barnett and Teron Jackson. Just four guys. Now, Barnett's gone. Teron Jackson, who's a sixth-round pick in his second year, is sort of elevated to number three. And here's the weird thing, Adam. I don't ever remember the Eagles doing this. But I'm pretty certain they don't even have a developmental defensive end on the practice squad. Am I wrong about that? They've made so many transactions over the last week or so.
You're right. No one. In fact,
what team does not keep a developmental defensive end on the
the international exemption? Yeah, I don't count. Matt Leo is just a practice guy. He's a tall guy, but he just doesn't have the talent.
Poor Matt Leo. Like, what do you mean I don't count?
Sorry, dude. He reminds me of there was a D end who was from Estonia.
Margus Hunt?
Yes, Margus Hunt. That's the guy. Thank you. Who really had to learn how to play football in our country here.
Yeah.
And he got drafted. He was a journeyman, D tackle, D end.
Yeah, he went to SMU first, right? I think.
He actually did the shot put. He did track.
Right.
But what he did was he was really good on field goal teams, blocking kicks. That's all he really can do. He couldn't rush at all.
Yep.
Margus Hunt was his name.
Margus, right.
Primarily played for the Bengals, but a couple other teams. But anyway, so Matt Leo is the international exemption. Every team gets one, and that's all he can do is practice. But you're right. They have no developmental DNs, or actually pass rusher for that matter. In fact, the only linebackers that they have on their practice squad are Davion Taylor, mm-hmm. the former third rounder was cut, Christian Ellis, Luther Ellis' son, who's a very fast inside linebacker, and that's it.
Yeah, both of those guys are stack linebackers. They're not pass rushing linebackers.
Right. So now, also, so they're going to actually have two spots open.
Yes.
So they already had, they only had 52 yesterday going into the game. So that's why they only had six inactives for the game, because they did not replace the one roster spot that they had open for Andre Diller, who was on injured reserve. So they actually technically will have two once they do that. Now, I know people are like, oh my gosh, they have to trade for anyone. No, Derek Barnett was just a rotational player. He's an okay player. It's not going to, I mean, he's a guy that could play stand-up linebacker, could play defensive end with his hand down when they play a four-man front.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a big deal. I mean, he's just part of their rotation. Well, the problem is they're paying him a lot of money to be one of those guys.
Well, got hurt. They are. They gave him a surprisingly more lucrative contract than we would have imagined.
Yeah.
And then also, it only becomes a big deal because of his experience. I mean, he can be a productive player when he's out there. Not a great one, but productive one. Teron Jackson has not played a lot of football, although we both thought he had a very good camp. And secondly, you're now a Brandon Graham or Josh Sweat injury away from Teron Jackson being a starter and having no defensive ends until they sign one, which they will, but that's going to be somebody who's on the street right now or on somebody else's practice squad right now. It's not going to be someone that you're imagining can be an impact player. So it's just a jolt to the defensive line that was deep, and that you could say, hey, if I have a problem with Sweat or Graham, with an injury, I can play Derek Barnett, and I know what I'm getting. Now you're in kind of uncertain territory, and hoping that Brandon, who's well north of 30 and coming off an Achilles, is going to stay injury and be productive and be good as the season goes on, and same with Sweat.
Yeah, and by the way, next year his base salary is fully guaranteed, but it's very small. But they can get out of it. So it was a 2-year deal with a 3-year void with a 1-year structure. So they could easily get out of it and just own the just over $1 million. So yeah, this could be it for him, unfortunately. And it's not like he's old. He only turns 26 mm-hmm. Actually turns 27 in June 25th. So yeah, unfortunately they lost him. He's just a rotational player at this point. He never became the player that they thought he would be. He's certainly not a bust because he came back. They signed him to a second contract, but I put him in the disappointment category. He was never the pass rusher that Joe Douglas and Harry Roseman thought he would be.
Correct.
You know, leading sacker in Tennessee history over the great Reggie White, but he just never became that guy.
That is true. Now, one of the options I didn't mention in replacing him, they do have a player who can play some defensive end in Milton Williams, who is a hybrid lineman who has played inside and outside. He could do it situationally, but not. I wouldn't see him being a full-time defensive end. So if they get too many injuries and they'd had to play him there, they would be in a bind. So we'll see what they do as far as who's on the street. The weird thing is sometimes you'll see a team then bring back a player that they had in training camp who was playing at that position, but I can't even think of a defensive end that was with him in camp that would make sense to bring back. Like Kobe Smith was a defensive tackle. I can see if they got hurt there, he would come back. But I don't remember, other than Matt Leo, who they've got on the practice squad, nobody really stands out there.
No, so what they'll do is Teron Jackson, who didn't dress, he'll dress.
Yep.
And then he'll be, they look at them as edges. Sweat, Graham, Teron Jackson, are Brandon Graham are edge rushers.
Yeah.
So they're down an edge rusher. That's really what Derek Barnett was. So it does hurt the rotation a little bit, but it's not a deal killer, so to speak. It's not a big deal.
Not catastrophic.
And they, as you said, Mel Williams, he can't play linebacker, but he can play defensive end, and he'll do that if they need him to.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, now we're not aware of any other injuries. Fletcher Cox left a little bit, did come back in the game, but man. Once again, their defensive line was ineffective. It was hard to believe.
Yep.
Frank Ragnow's terrific as a center, but you're not playing 5-on-1. You're playing a whole unit, and their D line with their rotation and their ability to change the lineup. And also, we're going to get into later in the show some of the issues in the back end, which really plagued Gannon. This is one of our sources told us that is a real problem with Gannon. This guy played in the league, so I don't question people who play in the league.
Mm-hmm.
This guy does advance. This guy has the Eagles as one of his advanced teams, and this is what the tape shows him. These guys only go by tape. They have no biases or anything. Gannon continues to struggle doing certain things. I think you mentioned on the crossover there
mm-hmm.
With the show before us, and he's got to get better at certain things, or they're just not going to get their defense. I don't care if you brought the 85 Bears out. There's certain things you have to do, and he's not doing them.
We're going to go to the phone call soon, 610-632-0975. We have a couple calls lined up, but I want to reiterate something I've said quite often to you on the Inside the Birds podcast and in interviews. You know, I've said that people have almost said, like, the Eagles will go this year as far as Jalen Hurts takes them. And there's a truth to that. I'm not running away from it. But I think when people say that, they're sort of absolving the Jonathan Gannon element here. Like, the Eagles scored 31 points, or 38 points, but they almost lost, right? They could have lost there in the fourth quarter because the defense, if it had given up one more touchdown or one more bad play, they would have lost. So, like, to me, don't take Jonathan Gannon away from the microscope by saying it's all on Jalen Hurts. Certainly, a lot is on Jalen Hurts, but Jonathan Gannon needs to perform this year. He's under, you and I know that this team is looking at him to perform this year. It's not like he gets any free passes from upper management or anything if he's not good.
I got to tell you, I know we put a poll out on our Inside the Birds Twitter. I completely disagree with everyone. I know I'm in the minority. The pressure's way more on Gannon. we know what Jalen Hurts is as a quarterback. We kind of know he's settled in. He'll get better, by the way. He'll do a better job of going through his progression reading. He's more of a two-read quarterback. That's what we're told he is at this point in his career. But we saw some games last year. He was really good. Don't forget the Kansas City game. He did all he could to match Mahomes if the defense didn't show up that game.
I mean, they were down three touchdowns. That was a little bit of a garbage time defense, but all right.
But he moved the ball. He did a good job. There were certain times in his career with the Eagles, the Cardinal game in his first year, did a very good job. There were certain games where you go, okay, we're seeing progress. The first game last year against Atlanta, there were easy throws.
Right.
But there were some games where you go, okay, the Denver game, the first half of the Denver game, where they shocked Vic Fangio. I mean, that was surprising.
Yeah.
He had some really good throws.
Yep.
So you saw some progress in certain games. Some you didn't. He still has a long way to go. But Jonathan Gannon, like, the excuses are over. The front office could not do any more than they did to give him talent at all three levels.
Agreed.
I get that he doesn't blitz a lot. You don't have to blitz to win. You have to do something to impact the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
That is a thing that he struggles with. I get he's a first-time play caller. We're in year two now. The excuses are over. You had excuses last year with Steven Nelson. He's no longer here. You got to get the job done. He did not get the job done Sunday. They were not good enough. Period. End of story.
There you go. All right, Pat from Maple Glen is going to be first up on Inside the Birds Radio. What's going on, Pat?
Gentlemen, how are you? I have so much to say in limited time.
Good.
Same.
I think the Eagles were out-coached. And one thing they mentioned on the broadcast was Sirianni stopped play calling so that he'd be more involved in the game day events, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would ask Sirianni, why did you have 12 men on the field a couple times? Why, Nick, are you getting your cadence started with less than 10 seconds?
There was too much confusion and too many penalties. And then I get it. The first game is sort of like they call it the fourth preseason game. But I appreciate the point that a head coach who says he's going to be a CEO and not a play caller should probably have had that under wraps a lot better.
Right, because if you start your cadence that late, then you eliminated the audibles. Secondly, look, Hurts, I'm sure, is a nice guy. You're not going to win with him running the ball like that, because what's going to happen is their defense is now going to force him to run left, and they're going to spy him. That's what I think is going to happen.
That's what the Bucks did.
So, that was actually started, I think, by the Giants last year in the first game. But Pat, let's make a distinction, because I want to make sure we're of an understanding of this. When you say running, they're not going to win with Jalen Hurts running, do you mean running 17 times a game, or do you mean running at all? I mean, are you expecting him to be like a pocket quarterback?
It's certainly a fab, very good weapon to have a running quarterback who can run.
Okay, good.
But don't run so much. And when you do run, and when you do get past that initial rush, think about possibly throwing.
Well, yes, Pat. Sure. Thanks for the phone call. I mean, you can't run 17 times a game. I think he knows that.
The
coach knows that.
Yeah,
I don't think Jalen Hurts wants to run 17 times a game. Although I'm not sure, because I do think he enjoys. He's such a competitor.
He was.
I think he loves just making plays on the run, which is great. He's good at it.
I can't believe it. Yeah, I have to say this much though. One thing. He was. This is the most dynamic I've seen him since he's been an Eagle. I could not believe. You know, I watched the there's a condensed copy. You know, watching in an hour from NFL.com, and I was watching this morning. I just couldn't believe it. I was like, this is even better than I thought it was. Because we never thought he was real explosive, but shifty. This is maybe it's that turf at Ford Field. This is the fastest I've seen him look. And he got out of so many plays where they clearly couldn't block anybody. There were some plays where the offensive line just simply didn't do its job.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't blame him for at least half of the times that he ran, because he's under siege. Now, some of them he needed to step up, but I just want to throw that in there, because I got to tell you, he's a pretty special runner. But you're absolutely right. No quarterback will ever last. If you run even three games in a row 17 times, you're going to get crushed.
Yeah.
You're just inevitable. You're not a running back.
Yeah, and listen, I will agree with a lot of the statements made. He is a dynamic runner. He does have a good ability to avoid major hits. But sometimes you get hit, and he did get hit, and there were late hits. And it's easy to say, well, that's not allowed. The NFL will crack down on it. It doesn't mean it's not going to happen. How many times per week do you see a defensive player accidentally put a late hit on a player because they left, their momentum was taking them there, they tried to hold up, it didn't. I mean, we see roughing the passer penalties week after week after week, where the defensive end is shocked that he got called for it because he thought maybe he just got pushed in to the quarterback. So when Jalen Hurts runs, even if he's good at evading contact, it's going to get him sooner or later. And if he runs 17 is ridiculous. 12 to 13 is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But Adam, you know this as well. We'll talk about this in the next hour when we get more into the offense, but I think that there's, because I heard people calling up this station today, and we've even gotten some feedback on it. I thought we were going to see a different offense this year. I thought we were going to see Jalen going through more progressions this year. I think people are still thinking this offense is going to look something like maybe what the 2017 offense looked like with Carson, or what Vic in 2010 or McNabb RPO-ish. In 2004. Yeah. I don't think they realize that the RPO is alive and kicking with this offense, and it's not going away. This is going to be an RPO-centric offense. You just said it. Last year, it was probably one read and go. They added A.J. Brown. You saw the difference that he makes. And Hurts has developed where he can get to one and two and then go. But there's not going to be a whole lot of looking around, surveying, second progression, third progression. They want him to be able to – they know what he is. They know that he's gotten from one to two now, but that he's going to run when he feels that pinch of pressure. And they've designed an offense to utilize that to their strength.
Yeah, no doubt. It's an RPO-based offense. That's not going to change. A little bit of zone read.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between zone read and RPO. RPO is a run pass option. Zone read, you're not throwing it. You're
running.
You're
going
to run it,
right,
or you're going to hand it off.
Right.
So
right.
This is it. There's a lot of college to this offense. It's what they have to do with Hurts to win. He's a running quarterback. By the way, the Bills do RPO.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Allen ran 10 times yesterday. He had three games of over 10 rushes.
Right.
Now, he's a much bigger guy. He's 4 inches bigger and probably 30 plus pounds heavier. Still, talking to the Bills, the majority of his runs were actually designed.
Mm-hmm.
But they do it with the belief that he knows where he's going. He rarely takes a hit. Now if he starts doing double digits, you want to 6 or 7 runs a game is good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying you can't do more than that, but when you start doing double digits a game, you're asking for trouble, because not every run is going to be going out of bounds.
Right.
As you just outlined very well, they're going to be cheap shots. Guys are going to lower their head. That's the thing you worry about. This nonsense about, oh, well, a majority of his, he could get hurt in the pocket too. Well, so could a running back. That's nothing to do with it.
Right.
The more you ask a quarterback to do, run the football, the better chance he has to get hurt. That's just the way it is. It doesn't have to do anything to do with in the pocket or not in the pocket. It's if you run and leave, you're asking pursuit players to go get you. That's just reality.
Yeah. This isn't, and again, it's not going to ever be a conventional West Coast offense. It's not what they see, and that's not what they feel is the best type of offense to run with Jalen Hurts as the quarterback. And once they decided this offseason that Jalen Hurts was still going to be their quarterback, there were no other options, and they liked him better than other options in the draft or what was around in trade and free agency that was available to them, they went and said, okay, let's give him the best weapons we can get for the offense we want to run. Because I don't think every wide receiver is made for an RPO offense the way A.J. Brown is, for example, because of what he can do on those quick slants and digs and take the ball from the middle of the field and then run after the catch. I mean, he's perfect for what they want to do. So that's what they built their offense around, and I still think people are waiting for it to morph into something that they used to see in the past, but that is not what you're going to see.
In terms of, what do you mean by that?
Like a conventional West Coast. Like the Eagles were a West Coast offense even when Michael Vick was the quarterback. They were just Coast offense with a guy who could run. They were a West Coast offense with Donovan McNabb as quarterback, but they were a West Coast offense with a guy who can run. They were a West Coast offense with Carson Wentz as the quarterback, but he could use his athleticism and run. This may have some route concepts that are West Coast, but as you saw against the Lions, they are going to run a ton of RPOs. This offense is meant for Jalen Hurts to either hand the ball off to the running back, tuck it, take it from the running back and run himself, or throw that quick slant, quick dig based on what the defense is showing. It's not going to be conventional drop back, five steps, look around, look around, look around. Even as he improves, because they've already, and people say, well, that means they've already told themselves what they think Jalen Hurts is. That's okay. But, you know, not everybody is built the same way. You know, Justin Herbert's 6'4", what, 6'5", 250? And he can wait and wait, or maybe, maybe like 235, 240, but he can wait and wait and fire that thing at the very last second as the defense bears down because he has a howitzer, right? And the ball almost never touches the ground with him.
Understand.
That's not who Jalen Hurts is, but that doesn't mean he can't be a winning quarterback.
On that, coaching is about understanding what you have and what's the best way to win with that quarterback. Last year, they pulled the air out of the football because Hurts couldn't handle throwing the ball 35 times a game, which he was throwing the ball through 6 weeks. So the coaching is about what's going to take to win with this quarterback. Okay, they did that. They led the league in rushing. They made the playoffs. Really good job by Sirianni. Didn't see that coming. No one did. They were 2-5 when they did it. Great job. Okay, that's out the window. The number I came up with, 32 times a game, I think that, to me, is the sweet spot. Mm-hmm. That just happened to be the number that they used yesterday. The league average is over 30. It's somewhere between 30 and 32 for most quarterbacks. If you want to win this league, you got to throw the ball more. I think we all know that. They're not going anywhere if they become a running team. It's just not. You got to throw the football.
They threw the ball all over the place in the first half. I mean, they just
threw almost every play. I loved it. I love how aggressive they were.
Sure.
When they could protect.
And I thought he made really good decisions when he threw the ball.
By the way, he always does. He does not. When I say always, I'm talking about not turning it over. Carson Wentz, and I give him credit. I don't know if you saw the Jacksonville game.
Mm-hmm.
Carson gave it away, and he got it back.
Yeah, I saw the kind of fluky screen he tried to throw that Trayvon Walker.
The middle screen, right.
That was pretty impressive by Trayvon Walker, I guess.
Yes, it was. But he brought the team back. Great job. But Carson is a high risk. Wentz is a high risk quarterback. Hurts is risk averse. That's okay.
Yeah.
They define it. They tell him where to go with the throw. And he'll generally do it when he's willing to do it, when he doesn't have it in his mind to run. Running quarterbacks tend to run a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But the hope is, as we go along here, he starts to see it better. And year two as a full-time starting quarterback, that's the hope. And I believe there is hope for that because he did some of that in the offseason.
Yeah, for a guy who took as many hits as he did and ran as much as he did and threw as much as he did to not have put a ball. I think he put one ball in harm's way. It could have been intercepted. It wasn't. Okay. But he had zero turnovers. And we noticed that last year that he was particularly good in taking care of the ball. There were a few games where it got away from him. The Giants game, he had three interceptions. I think there was another game, the Tampa Bay game. But in general, he does not throw the ball to the opponent or fumble it. And again, for all the time that the ball is in his hands and the volume of offense that he occupies, he doesn't turn the ball over. And that's really important, and that's really difficult as well.
That's what you're after, and that's what gives you a chance to win. And look, we're not here to criticize or praise. We're here going to tell you what we know.
That's what the offense is. Yeah.
They scored 31 points on offense yesterday. I mean, you got to feel pretty good about that. And the left points on the table, there were some throws, as I understand it. Hurts clearly didn't see it because he was too worried about what was going on around him.
Mm-hmm.
But the deeper you get in the season, the more comfortable he'll be. If they protect better, by the way, they did not protect very well. For whatever reason, and look, they blitzed. Aaron Glenn, he had an idea in his mind. He's like, I'm coming after it. This is what we're doing, and he sure as heck did that.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to continue to talk about the defense. We'll get into the offense. Miles Sanders had a huge game. I think he proved a few people wrong. And there are some interesting developments, I would say, since the end of that game that we'll talk about as well, all here on Inside the Birds Radio on the Fanatic. We'll, of course, take your phone calls at 610-632-0975. I've neglected to mention that our producer tonight is Tyler Zully. He's one of the best, always does a great job. So before I forget to tip my cap to you, Tyler, I'll do it now. And he's also a great fellow Penn Stater. So we're getting excited for the Auburn game this weekend, I know. 3-point favorites, by the way, I think last I checked. Anyway, this is Adam Kaplan and Jeff Mosher. That's Inside the Birds Radio. We'll be back after this.
97.5 The Fanatic. 97.5 The Fanatic. Now, back to Inside the Birds.
With Jeff Mosher and Adam Kaplan.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 97.5 The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
That's right. Hour two of Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5. The Fanatic, Jeff Mosher and Adam Kaplan. Of course, Inside the Birds Radio brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. All right, Adam. 610, by the way, 610-632-0975 is the number to call. We talked about this on the post-game show that we do with ourselves and Trey Thomas right after the game on our Inside the Birds YouTube channel. And I don't know what it's going to take for Miles Sanders to ever get a little respect in this town. It's like they're always picking him apart. But you know what? The coaches don't always show him the respect either. A guy gets 24 yards on that third and one. Critical. Fourth and one, I'm sorry. And then three plays later, when it's third and one, they get Boston Scott in there to get the first down. He runs tougher than he's given credit for. I think the injury history and annoyance for the fans about that sort of clouds their vision of the kind of runner that he is. He dances too much or he doesn't hit. It's not true.
Yeah, Greg Cosell, a good friend of ours from NFL Films, said, as you just brought up, we asked him this. He goes, it's false. Sometimes he wants to hit the home run. All gifted players or gifted running backs like Sanders try to sometimes, but he doesn't dance. He's actually pretty decisive.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, he might pick the wrong gap to go through. Okay, running backs would do that. But he's not like Barry Sanders where the hole's there and he goes to the other side. He's not doing that. I mean, he's a very gifted guy. He's had a pretty significant injury history, particularly with soft tissue injuries,
mm-hmm.
specifically with hamstring. He just had problems with it. I don't know what else he can do. He's talked about the training regimen, got in better shape. He built his lower body up. But the issue that I have, and maybe the coaches clearly have something, an issue, it's actually two staffs now. We've talked about this on our show Inside the Birds, our podcast, for the last couple weeks. In their four-minute offense, he's just not the guy. Which is what the 4-minute offense, folks, is when you have a lead, there's a closer. We call it the closer for a better term as a closer. They don't see him as a closer. He's not small. He's 210, 215, but they see him more as a finesse back, unfortunately.
It seems that his reputation sometimes gets the worst of the coaching staff because normally you'd be reluctant to give the ball to somebody in a 4-minute offense if you thought they were going to turn the ball over, put the ball on the ground. That was something that he struggled with earlier in his career, along with drops. But in that case, you're not worried about drops because you're not trying to pass the ball too much. And then, if I'm not mistaken, I thought he only had one fumble last year. So, yeah, he had one fumble last year. He had four the year before. So, you get it. Six in the first 2 years, four in 1 year is too much. And so, I understand there's that trepidation to want to give him the ball. But there were times like the Jets game last year where he handled the ball, 25 times, and he had over 100 yards, and he had over 100 total yards against the Lions on just, I think, 11 or 12 total touches. He is, by far, the Eagles' most explosive running back when you compare him to Kenneth Gainwell and Boston Scott. Maybe Kenneth Gainwell will get to that point where the explosion you saw at Memphis, you start to see at the NFL level. He's a good pass catcher. He does have good abilities. He's not shown right now that he's more explosive than Miles Sanders, and we know what Boston Scott is as well. Reliable, sturdy, breaks tackles well, is not going to rip off a 70-yard touchdown run the way Miles Sanders can. So I guess my question would be, like, if you've already decided that you're not going to give him a contract extension, but you have him for the final year, and he is your best offensive weapon, why are you not giving him the ball more when you need to move the chains? He is the only one you've got that could break off a 35 to 45-yard run like that. And when he gives you one of those 24-yard runs and then you immediately get him off the field, I feel like you're intentionally taking an explosive element of your offense away from your team. And I'm conflicted on how they use him.
Boston Scott has actually been fairly productive in short yardage situations. Goal line, obviously.
Sure. And so is Kenneth Gainwell, by the way.
Yeah, which is not what we thought when he was drafted. Jeff and I had Ryan Silverfield, the head coach of Memphis, on where Gainwell played. And we asked him, like, what do you see? And Ryan talked about the role that Gainwell had in 2019. He took 2020 off due to the pandemic. But, oh, yeah, use him as a pass catcher. They might do a pony package. We've seen a little bit of Gainwell and Sanders, a dual backfield, but
mm-hmm.
he's still not doing quite what we thought he would be doing in the passing game. he'll catch it. But I'm waiting for him, as Greg Cosell told us, to be lined up out wide as a receiver and run receiver routes and run in breakers and catch the ball, because apparently he's got very good hands. Now, I know he had a very up and down training camp, more down than up. He did have a minor injury, but he hasn't quite done yet what we thought he would do.
No, and I looked through the checklist of what you would want from Miles Sanders specifically in week one. Did he catch the ball? Well, he got thrown the ball twice, and he caught it. Okay, check. Did he run tough? He absolutely ran tough. Anyone who says, well, he had like 5 to 7 yards to begin with because of the offensive line, go rewatch the game. There were plenty of times he was getting hit and trying to keep his legs churning and getting extra yards. So check. Did he score a touchdown? Did he rush for a touchdown, which he didn't do all of last year? Yes, check. Was it a red zone goal line situation touchdown? It was. Check. So the idea that Miles Sanders is, you know, not equipped or not fit to be the best running back for this team, to me, is ridiculous. Does he have to stay healthy?
He's their best running back.
Absolutely. He's their best running back. And as the personnel source that I was talking to about the game, I mentioned him in the first part. Same thing he said to me is, when you see your quarterback playing well, like Jalen Hurts was playing, but also taking that many hits, why wouldn't you, if you still wanted to be an RPO team or a run-based team, why wouldn't you just every once in a while switch up, go a little old-fashioned, you got a big offensive line, go under center, and have your quarterback hand the ball off to Miles Sanders from an under center formation. And now I know everybody says, well, they don't practice that, they don't practice that. Yes, they do, because they did it last year. When they decided to redesign their whole offensive scheme at 2-6.
It's the Raiders.
Against the Raiders, they started. Now, sure. Miles Sanders got hurt in that game. But he was having actually a very good game,
ironically,
from running under center. And then they played the Lions the next week, and they ran a lot with Jordan Howard and Boston Scott under center. And then once they established that, you'll remember, once they started rolling over teams, then they started to redevelop their rushing offense into a back to a shotgun, zone read, quarterback design run offense, which also worked really well because Jalen Hurts does that very well. But I understand that viewpoint where every once in a while, you got to take a little pressure off the quarterback. You've got a great offensive line, and Miles Sanders, while healthy, is good enough guy to turn around, hand them the ball, and try to tire out the defense.
Think about it. He touched the ball 50 times. Okay? Actually, to be totally accurate.
Jalen Hurts, right?
32 attempts and 17 rushes. As you just said, that's a lot of work. It's a lot of work for him, for any young quarterback. Second full year as a starter, third year in the league. And I thought he handled himself well, considering he was under siege. I understand there were the throws he's got to make, he didn't make. This happens to him a lot, unfortunately. Sometimes he just needs to settle down and let the play go. He wasn't, every dropback, he was not under pressure. Let's get that straight. Mm-hmm. People were acting like he was under pressure every play. No, he wasn't. There are plenty of plays he was, and he got flushed where anyone would have run.
Right.
I get that part of it. But we need to see him mature a little bit more as a passer. And I assume it will happen based on what we were told. He looked much better. His ability to read what was in front of him was way better in the offseason this year than it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
So you expect him to make a bigger jump. And teams know kind of, Detroit said, Aaron Glenn said, basically, based on the way that they played, we're coming after this kid. We're going to make him beat us.
Right.
And he didn't do it with his arm for the most part. He did it with his legs. And
right.
He was dynamic, though he made some throws.
Well, that brings into the AK. Yeah. That brings
AJ Brown.
Yes, yeah. I mean the difference that AJ Brown makes compared to, you know, your average wide receiver in that spot was enormous. I mean,
that's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's really the cool thing for us as media, but also for Eagles fans, is that you guys out there, everybody out there, ladies, gentlemen, all that, y'all haven't seen a wide receiver like A.J. Brown in about 20 years. And I'm not saying he's Terrell Owens. I'm not making apples-to-apples comparison. But Eagles wide receivers in the post-Terrell Owens era have tended to look a certain way. Shorter, a little bit like laterally quick, like your Kevin Curtis or your Reggie Brown or Jeremy Maclin even. Jeremy Maclin could take the top off of defense, but he wasn't as strong. Like his hands and his body were not as physically strong, nearly as physically strong as A.J. Brown. DeSean Jackson, of course, was not a physically strong wide receiver. He was a deep threat. He was a great deep threat.
One of the best deep threats in NFL.
Right. Your best example of like a strong, sure-handed receivers are Jason Avant and, well, I wouldn't call Jordan Matthews sure-handed, but he was big and strong. But they were not as explosive and powerful and didn't have the, even Jason Avant on our pregame show, right, was like, don't compare me to him. He's so much better than me.
Yeah, so what I had said, like, we haven't seen anyone this strong since Jason Avant. He kind of laughed, like, hey, hang on a second.
Yeah, he's like, don't mention me in the same sentence.
but A.J. Brown, the term is his ability to play through contact is something I've never seen. In fact, the thing, I don't think you were at practice that day. I know you and I were at training camp practice for a couple of them, but there was this one play which I could still see right in my mind's eye, right in front of me right now. I could still see it, where it was a sideline throw, and I give Hurts all the credit in the world because he was not open, but he obviously trusted A.J. Brown, his best friend, to go get the football. And I'm telling you, Darius Slay had great coverage. He was right up on him.
Mm-hmm.
But what A.J. Brown did is that subtle hand usage where he shoved him, but very subtly. Like, it wasn't a hard shove where he could get called for a penalty. He used his hand very quickly, and he caught the ball. And I'm looking, wait a minute, why didn't Slay, because he pushed Slay out of the way.
Right.
But he wasn't so obvious. And this is what the guy does. He turned Will Harris, is his name,
mm-hmm.
the corner, used to be a safety, inside out for the 54-yarder. Will Harris basically mugged him, and he still beat him. Unbelievable.
And that was a great display. By the way, that was a third down pass against a blitz that Jalen Hurts read very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can see that pass from the end zone view. He really, the way the defense was bearing down, I'm not sure if Jalen could see the entire field, but he knew that's the route he was going to run and that there was going to be a single matchup, but he just had to put the ball down the field, and he did it perfectly, kind of like that Quez Watkins throw week two last year against San Francisco. That went for 91 yards. Put it in the air perfectly, and the late hand. So Jason Avant has schooled us all on the Inside the Birds platform about what late hands is. And you saw that where AJ's running the route. He's running the route. He's tracking it. He doesn't have his hands out until the very last minute where he just snatches it, right? That's what you're talking about. He's getting mugged, but he fights off the contact and snatches the ball. And that's where a cornerback just says, I gave it all I had. I was there. I did everything I can do. That's how Patrick Surtain felt last year in the Broncos, like when Devontae Smith caught that touchdown. Because Patrick Surtain was right there, but Devontae Smith just made a better play. And A.J. Brown made that play time and again from a variety of different routes. And that is the difference that he's going to bring to this offense, and that he has helped already Jalen Hurts become a guy who was going from one read to go to two read and go, all right, I check that guy off, go to A.J. Brown. I got two areas of the field that I can hit right now, or else, if not, I'll just run. And there were what I thought was most important about A.J. Brown's presence was a lot of those plays that he made, Adam, were on third down. That's the money critical, you got to win pass down in the NFL that the Eagles did not do a good job of against good teams last year. You put A.J. Brown there, and you saw, at least for 1 week, again, week one can be a con job, but you expect that this kind of connection should be pretty consistent throughout the year.
All right, so are you concerned, though, that the lack of usage, Devontae Smith did not have a catch on his four targets? Are you concerned about
that? Sure. I think if you're saying there's no concern, you're just trying to see the bright side. The wide receivers, we know how they are. I don't think Devontae Smith is a diva at all, but I think he's an alpha, which is a good thing. Alpha dog, right? I mean, look at his career at Alabama. He was the man since he set foot on campus and that played that first game, the national championship game, and caught the game-winning touchdown, right? He wants the ball, too. So I don't have a concern after one game that he didn't get more than four looks. If there were two straight games like that, I'd say they got to figure out a way to get him more involved. If they have to move him around a little bit more, get him manufactured touches a little more, because he's not gonna be happy getting four looks, four touches, four targets every week for 17 weeks. But I also don't expect that to happen.
That.
Right. No, nobody would.
Yeah.
Nobody would.
Yeah.
Except for maybe like Mac Hollins. But that brings me back to my point. That brings me back to my point. The Eagle fan has become so used to a certain type of wide receiver and production. We haven't seen someone this talented, this explosive, since T.O. was here. And that's been a long time now.
The other thing, I think the Eagle fan has become so much smarter in recent years because of the information that's available. So they know that they know how talented Devontae Smith is. They understand a first-round pick who broke all sorts of records for the club as a rookie needs to get the football. Mm-hmm. And we all know that. Mm-hmm. You know how talented he is and how he could. And the other thing about him is he could really run well. We saw that bomb he caught against Denver.
Yep.
Where Surtain had good coverage, but he beat him.
Yeah.
Like, the kid's really gifted.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to get the football. But, you know, overall, as we dissected this thing, I mean, look, they scored 31 points in offense. And quite frankly, should have scored a lot more. There were some plays that they'd probably like to have back. But overall, you got to be pretty happy that they scored 31. They're going to play a better team and a better defense Monday night. Next Monday night, by the way, the Vikings come into the Link. The second half also of a doubleheader. Why they're not doing that why they didn't do it in week one, the NFL, they're doing it in week two, is beyond me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a little strange. Getting back to the offense, were you surprised by how much two tight end formations, how much 12 personnel the Eagles played?
Well, it's hard to argue that they should or shouldn't have done it when you consider how well they did running the football. And Jack Stoll, I'm telling you, I know people don't know this player very well. He was not this good of a blocker at Nebraska. He, believe it or not, before he partially tore his MCL, I'm told, he was actually better as a pass catcher. And then the injury kind of forced him to rehab and concentrate more on his blocking. And he's been a story, man. He played 36% of the snaps yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But we kind of knew something was up when Noah Tungiai was activated off the practice squad and not LaRaven Clark. Ooh, maybe. Well, they're going to dress three tight ends. They might as well use three of them. And sure, they did some what we call 13 personnel with two tight end sets, three tight end sets, and they did some of that.
Right.
But the big one was 12 personnel. Yes, they did a lot of that. And Jack Stoll was obviously a big part of that as the second tight end. So yeah, look, they were able to do that because it worked, no doubt about it. And you know, off of 12 personnel, it's not like you can't throw the football. In fact, they did that very well off of 12.
Right.
And that's from the RPO standpoint.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's kind of a byproduct of running a heavy RPO offense is that you're going to want those tight ends in there. You're going to need a little blocking if your quarterback's going to pull it and run. And plus, you need the quick hitting over-the-middle passes that Goddard and Stoll both can give you. 610-632-0975. It just came at the expense of Quez Watkins and Zach Pascal, who I think people thought were going to be a bigger part of the offense as interior receivers. But again, it could be matches.
By the way,
as well,
Pascal, I know it was only one catch for 7 yards. That was actually a really good catch.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
It's a muscle job by Pascal. That's what he does.
All right, DJ on the cell is going to join us here on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, DJ? You're on Inside the Birds Radio.
Hey, man, how you guys doing? Thanks for breaking this down a little bit for me.
You got it. Thanks for making the call.
I guess my question is, do you guys have the percentage of the times the defense blitzed yesterday?
Which defense, Eagles or Lions?
The Lions.
The Lions?
More than average?
Oh, God, they had to. I mean, I have not seen the percentages, and I've rewatched only the first half so far, but let me tell you, on the first three Eagles offensive possessions alone, there were more times that the Lions sent 5 and 6 and sometimes 7 than they did just 4.
Yeah, because that's the thing. I heard one of you guys mention, like, yeah, they didn't blitz, you know, as much. But I'm like, you know, and like I say, I'm just a dude at home watching the game, and it seemed like I was like, man.
Well, they were coming after. No, you're right.
Yeah, no, they listen, they didn't hide them either, DJ. They were putting 6 and 7 guys up on the line of scrimmage at times and either rushing him or dropping one guy back, but then they would rush someone from the secondary who didn't look like he was going to blitz. Mm-hmm. So they were doing all crazy stuff.
Yeah, so I guess in that sense, is it on Jalen to get a little bit better at finding that, you know, that half route to dump that ball off to? Because like you said, you know, an average quarterback, you know, under that much pressure, you know, he's done for.
Well, it's a fair question, DJ. We're up against right. I'll say this, though, and thanks for the call. Adam, it is on the quarterback. Whenever a defense brings more than 5, right, then it becomes beyond the offensive line. The offensive line can slide protect and they can do certain things, but you either need a running back to pick up the blitz of the extra by a guy, a tight end to do it, or the quarterback to just know, I got to get that ball out to my hot route. So the complications that can arise, and I saw this on a few third downs, Adam, is that when you're running the RPO and you fake that handoff, you know, there was a third and five where he had to fake the handoff and the defense got up on him so quick that by the time he pulls it and tries to throw to anybody, he literally just had to like fling the ball as fast as he could to Devontae Smith on one where it was like a fade, it got awkward. So I think that's on the coaches there to realize, okay, if this team's coming at us and coming at us,
loading the box,
we do have to kind of adjust and not always be so RPO heavy, well, because we got to let this guy throw the ball immediately.
What he has to do is he has to get out of a tough play. You got to change the play. Like, you have to see post pre snap. Mm-hmm. Okay, what are they trying to do here? The quarterback's got to get him out of a bad play.
Right. That's a good point. That's on Jalen to change it as well.
Last year, the Lions were ninth in blitz percentage at 27%. Guess what the Eagles were?
13%. I don't know.
You're close. They were 31st in blitz percentage, 16.4%.
Wow, that much, huh?
Yeah, exactly. They're 31st. So, and it actually went up because why? Look at how bad their schedule was. So easy.
Yeah. I remember those last games. He wasn't afraid to throw a few guys. Yeah.
Gail Gilbert's son, Garrett Gilbert.
Right.
For those of you old schoolers.
And, right.
Who was the? Oh, Trevor Siemian was terrible.
Man, that was rough. God. That was a murderer's row of quarterbacks to watch at the end of the season.
Yeah, the COVID thing that hit these teams and the injuries that hit these teams. So, right. Yeah, the blitz percentage. Aaron Glenn is he's an old school guy, so he wants to blitz.
Right.
And the reason why you do that is you clearly do not think this guy could throw the ball well enough, Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, you challenge him.
You're like, beat me. Go beat me.
Beat me.
And by the way, he did beat them.
There are many times that he did. All right, Football Monday on The Fanatic is presented by Pearson Phelps. Whatever it takes, go to nopaybryant.com. We're going to take a break. Jeff Mosher, Adam Kaplan, Inside the Birds Radio here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic. 97.5 The Fanatic. Back to Inside the Birds
with Jeff Mosher and Adam Kaplan,
presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 97.5 The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
Oh man, Jeff Mosher, Adam Kaplan back here on Inside the Birds Radio on The Fanatic, which was of course brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top rated sportsbook app. This show has flown by. We have this one final segment. We got some calls lined up. We'll take them before we give way to my man, Devon Givens, who will take over at 8 o'clock, one of the best human beings to walk this planet. And just seeing Devon, Adam, reminds me of, because this is the first half of the year. Last year, when the Eagles, there was enthusiasm when they won the opener. Then they lost three straight. Then they kind of, won that awful game in Carolina. Then they lost a couple more. And they were 2-6. I left here, and the fans were really down on the team. We took some really rough calls. Jonathan Gannon, Jalen Hurts, Nick Sirianni, it was like fire everybody.
Yeah, everyone fire.
Yeah, so I get in the car and I put the station on the drive home. And Devon's usually one of the more even-keeled guys. He thinks things through.
No doubt.
And at some point, he was going on such an epic rant. And really? All I remember it ending with is, I don't like this team. I just don't like this. No, this was last year.
Oh, last year.
After they were 2-6. And he was literally like, I just don't like this team. It's not even about how they're playing. It's like, I don't even like them.
What was it, the Detroit game?
After the Raiders game, I must have been, because it was when they had,
I mean,
they were 2-6.
Not the Detroit game. I'm talking the Niners game, that week two, where they
No, because Devon's not so impatient that he's going to blow his casket after 1-1. It had to be like when they were 2-6.
Oh, the Raiders game was terrible.
Yeah, I think it was that. I think it might have been. Yeah, it was definitely after that game. Yeah,
I mean, it's funny, when I was going through the numbers prior to our show yesterday, we do a pregame show, because, look, I get it. When you face great quarterbacks, it's tough. You don't expect it to be great against them, but they were so bad against even above-average quarterbacks last year, they actually didn't compete.
Uh-huh.
The 82% completion rate against upper echelon. We're talking about even the upper half. Jimmy Garoppolo, like guys like that. I mean, they were 0-7.
Remember when Justin Herbert came in? And I know he's a great quarterback, but their offensive line was down three starters and Justin Herbert.
Oh, yeah.
And they had like tight end. They used three tight ends, but none of them were all like great. They just had three. One guy was like Andrew Stevenson, right? And their right tackle is like Storm Norton.
Storm Norton, I love that. I love that name.
Sounds like an adult star name, to be honest with you. And he let like three balls hit the ground. And I was like, in Philadelphia, he had it like way too comfortable in Philadelphia.
We had heard from a team that had a veteran quarterback. And I guess you could call this guy a veteran. But anyway, the quarterback said to someone in the front office, this is the easiest defense I've ever faced in my life. Because Gannon made it so easy.
Yeah.
Because he didn't challenge anything. He was, and I understand, like, his thing was, okay, I got Steven Nelson. Let's just not get beat over the top. Okay,
yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if you start coaching totally to your limitations, you're going to get fired someday. That's just the way it is.
That is true.
If he coaches like this year, he's not coming back next year.
How could he, right?
Yeah, you got, and I'm just telling you, the early word we got, I'm not saying he didn't disguise, he did some, but they were so soft in the second half, it made it so easy for Jared Goff.
Yeah.
Like, they're lucky this game didn't go to overtime. They might have lost.
Well,
I mean, they were getting to the, okay, we're just going to give up, just don't give anything over the top. Well, they still got beaten by DJ Chark.
Right.
It started to get really ugly again.
And listen, it's not going to get any easier Monday night because you're facing a team with another great running back. Maybe not as good as an offensive line, but a good enough one that they could drop. What did they have? How many points did the Vikings score on a Packers good defense last night?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a good Packers defense. Yeah. And Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen coming to town. And, of course, Jalen Reagor will be back here in Philadelphia. Let's take some phone calls. The number is 610-632-0975. We'll talk to Shannon first in Georgia. What's going on, Shannon? Shannon? Going once?
Just,
okay.
You there?
Yeah, got you.
There?
Go ahead. Okay, yeah, hey, just want to give my perspective as you know, being at that game for the second year in a row.
Nice.
Nice. The best player in the building yesterday was Jalen Hurts, by far. I'm thinking, I go back to that game last year in Detroit. That building was half empty. Jalen, I think, threw for maybe 100 yards.
They only completed 11 passes in that game.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he dominated the game. And that place was half empty. Yesterday, for the majority of that first half and part of the second half, I couldn't hear my own voice. Mm. It was so loud in there, sold out. Crazy Lions fans.
Yeah.
And the offensive line, you know, look, I'm not trying to be a Hurts defender, but after watching that game yesterday, and I realized that defensively, Detroit did not win any one-on-one battles, but their scheme, you know, combined with the noise in there where you couldn't hear anything, had that offensive line so confused. You know, I keep hearing about, well, you know, he's got to get rid of that ball quickly, but I'm not sure I'm not an expert. I'm just a football maniac. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, God, with this RPO system, mm-hmm. I'm not sure what quick options, you know, as far as quick slants, you know, there are. You know, let's keep in mind he had a couple guys. I mean, that third down drop by the guy, the backup tight end, I mean, that money was
a stole or tongue guy.
That ball was on the money. Was absolutely on the money.
We feel that Jalen Hurts played a really good game. Now, if I were to do a ranking, which I don't, and we try not, I would say A.J. Brown, to me, felt like the best player on the field just because I know Jalen's got to throw him the ball, Shannon, but the way he got open and made some of those catches in third down, especially.
Akuda couldn't cover him. Okay, he couldn't cover him.
Yeah.
But no, it seemed like seven guys on the field.
Right.
Could not cover Hurts because there was guys coming free over and over again because the line was so mixed up.
He was the most dynamic, Shannon. Thanks for the phone call. I've seen him since he's been an Eagle. I could not believe how explosive he was. He's never looked this explosive before. It was really remarkable. He got them out of so many. This was not a game where.
Well, he certainly has never run 17 times, even.
Right.
But
he was under siege. This was not a game, because we've had our criticisms of Hurts, which has been validated by a lot of people.
Sure.
Where he would just run when there was no pressure. A guy could be 5 yards from him. He'd roll to the right for no reason and run.
Mm-hmm.
This was not like that. Where there's sometimes. The issue that we had is there were some guys open. He just didn't see them because he's so used to going 1-2 in his progression and not seeing a guy down. In fact, there was a screen, an easy screen to Goddard. He just didn't throw it. He waited till Brown crossed the face of the defender.
Mm-hmm.
He should have thrown it to Goddard. Goddard could have run for 20 yards.
Mm-hmm.
That's something coaches will point out that's easily correctable. But his feet were incredible. I just was kind of like, I'd not seen anyone like, even Vic is obviously never, he was electric, but he's not as strong physically as Hurts.
Right.
But this is the most explosive we've seen Hurts. And by the way, he had to be, because their line gave up a lot of pressure.
Yeah. I'm thinking now that the Lions sort of played this game where, all right, we're going to challenge him to either throw the ball against this intense pressure or try to run. In the footage I was watching today, I don't know that they spied him per se, because I just don't know that they have a player in their back seven. The safety's pretty decent. What's his name? Tracy Walker, I think. Or
he's good. Yeah, who got chucked.
Yeah. That's right. He's okay, but I don't think they had anybody at the linebacker level that they felt comfortable with using as a spy. So they just felt like, let's throw, instead of a spy, let's just throw that extra body at him and see if we can get him running.
And look,
many times he beat it.
By the way,
many times he just ran to the sideline, threw the ball out of bounds. That was smart
too. Talked about it today. Like, he kind of said, listen, there's, what could we do? He beat us with his feet.
Right.
That's, Dan Campbell's a straight shooter. I mean, I just listened to his press conference this morning. I was like, I've not heard a coach just say this guy beat us with, we just couldn't stop him.
Right. Now the Vikings have Harrison Smith, who's a good safety. I don't know if he's as great as he was a year or two ago, but he's still pretty good. Smart player. Eric Kendricks, another good player.
Who could run.
Yeah, absolutely. So, maybe they're just as aggressive, but they've got some better personnel to maybe make that tackle after the 6 yards and not 11 like it happened to the Lions. We'll have to see how they both game plan for each other. 610-632-0975. David in North Philly up next on ITB Radio here on The Fanatic. What's up, David?
Yo, what's up, Jeff?
Long time, brother. How you doing?
What's going on? What's up, Adam?
All right. Good to talk to you, man.
I'm going to speak it into existence. I said the last year, I would say this year, football season may end. They need to have you guys on in the off season. I couldn't
love
wait
to
get to you guys.
Yeah, we'd love to.
That was going on.
The problem is, David, as much as you enjoy us and we enjoy being here, people really like the Sixers and the Flyers, too.
Yeah, I do, too.
And I don't blame them. So it's a little, well, at least for the Sixers, it's the way the Sixers are playing. The Flyers, I don't know. Hopefully they'll get their act back together. But they take some precedence, and that's totally understandable.
I get it, but I'm still, put that positive energy out.
I appreciate it. Thanks, appreciate it. What's up?
You know, week one is like, it's like makeup. It can disguise some stuff. It can expose some stuff. You got to touch. They were sloppy. And the one positive about the sloppiness they had, the coaches can now jump, take all that over-ego that they came into this, they listened to the papers and stuff, and the rankings, you can jump on them hard and say, them rankings didn't help you out there when y'all gave up almost 400 yards. Get back in the weight room. Whatever Kelsey was saying, get back, get your focus back.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterback played out of his mind. I don't want him to run that much, but there's certain games where you got to do it, and there's just no other way around.
Sure.
This was one of those games. A.J. Brown, I was listening to the game on the radio, and I was watching it at the same time. There was a little tiff, Devontae Smith, he was kind of upset that he wasn't getting his targets. But that showed me something. He wants the ball, and I like guys. Like, I don't care about, receivers being divas and stuff. I want that T.O.
Yeah, well, you want the cooperative team. You want the guy who, like I said, alphas, right? I mean, the same thing with Devontae Smith. He's a guy who wants the ball. He's an alpha.
Yeah, I don't want Jalen Meyer. I want the dude, the pressure's right there. It's fourth down. This is the last play, make it or break it. I don't want him sitting there, drop the ball in the end zone, thinking about should have, could have, would have. But the benefit for this is A.J. Brown is going to draw so much attention that you can't double him, you can't double Smith, you can't double Goddard. You want to pick your poison.
Yes.
Now, agree. In fact, someone from the team, it's funny, Dave, you said that. Someone from the team actually mentioned that to me. We ran to someone at training camp.
Thanks for the call, Dave.
Who said he could not wait to see how defenses are going to play them because you can't cover everybody. That's a dynamic trio there between the two receivers and Goddard. I'm telling you, A.J. Brown, when the trade went down, right, during the draft, I remember you and I doing our sort of like an update on the roster, maybe that night. Certainly it was during the draft.
Uh-huh.
And I was just giving you, from a Titans perspective, how special they thought this player was. And I said, the fans have no idea. They've heard of A.J. Brown. They know he's very good. But you've never really seen him play very much. Because how much you really watch the Titans?
Right.
This guy is so dominant. If he stays healthy with... he's got two knees that have been scoped. I'm told one's a little bit better than the other.
Mm-hmm.
But if this guy holds up physically, Because I think you asked the question, you know, what happened last year? Why was his average yards per catch down? Their offensive line had all sorts of injuries, all sorts of injuries. And then without Derrick Henry, it made him easier to cover. Well, with this team, this offensive line, and that quarterback who could run, and Smith and Goddard, this guy's good. Look, he's not going to have 15 catches a game or 15 targets a game.
Right.
But he's going to probably have over 100 catches a game if he plays like 15 or 16 games.
Probably. I mean, listen, after what we saw Sunday night, like you're probably hoping, or Sunday afternoon, you're probably thinking maybe he can be so high volume, almost Justin Jefferson like the way he gets targeted so much. And maybe
he will. Have a problem with that?
No, I would not have. There should be, even in an RPO driven offense, there should be week to week, depending on what the matchups are, enough pass attempts for everybody to feast. And it may not be, you're not going to have all guys feast on in 1 week, but 2 out of 3 each week. And there's going to be some. Look, the Lions were okay formationally or schematically saying, we're going to put man defense, we're going to play a lot of man, and we're going to leave A.J. Brown to beat us, and he beat us, all right? Some teams are not going to do that. Some teams are going to say, we're going to pressure out of his zone, which is not the Buccaneers did that a lot last year. They played zone, but they still applied a lot of pressure with blitzing. All right, some teams are going to blitz and put more attention, even in man. They'll shade a slide of safety to A.J. Brown and leave Devontae Smith a little more open. People are going to change what they do. So A.J. Brown's not going to be single covered as much going forward as he was against the Lions. So then somebody else will get more opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
As long as Jalen Hurts finds him, that's the way it goes. 610-632-0975. We've got a call from Corey on I-95. Well, I assume I-95 in Delaware Valley area, Corey?
Yeah, no, I actually just passed the stadium.
Okay. Oh. Well, that is part of the Delaware Valley.
It is.
Yes.
So, A.J. Brown did all right. I mean, if he was really good, he would have scored.
Oh, stop.
You couldn't even play. That was such a bad joke, Corey. Like, I knew you weren't even. It's
weren't
one bit serious.
Weren't you blown away, though, yeah, in that game by this guy?
I mean, he did so good that, you know, it's going to be a waste of time for me to say anything about it.
Special. If you're an Eagles fan, I would think you would jump out of your seat. Like, this guy's special.
Yeah, he was incredible.
And he's yours, man, if you're an Eagles fan.
His shoulders are huge.
You know what's crazy, Corey? How much would he be the topic of conversation today if the Eagles had just allowed like one fewer touchdown? If that game was 38-27, right? I think that's all anybody would be talking about today would be how amazing A.J. Brown was.
Yeah. Yep. But let me move on to my point. But sure. I understand the first game. I expect some sloppiness and things like that. And I'm glad they got the win. They got things to work on. So, you know, that's always good from a coaching standpoint.
Right.
But my...
Oh, man. Okay, we got
it. They took.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was bad.
Oh, the penalties?
Oh, it was bad.
The refs missed like 2 or 3. So if they're not hitting in practice, they better have a communication down. And that's coming from the sideline.
That is.
I'm glad you brought that up. Good stuff.
That's my biggest concern.
Yep, you're absolutely right. Okay.
Good job, Corey. Because that was a big issue for them last year, too.
Yep.
At the start of the year.
Start the season, right. Delay games. Okay, and you mentioned it with on the previous show, the with Hunter and Tyrone and everyone on that show, that like if you want to be CEO head coach, you this is the kind of stuff that can't happen. This is if you're not calling the plays and you're doing an overview of your team, you're coaching your coaches a lot and your players during the game, you really have to have this stuff under control. They're lucky. They were at least two, as the caller said, that were not called. That were clearly delays of game.
Right.
It's embarrassing.
Yes.
Like it. As a head coach, you have the ability to see it. The clock going down. Just call a timeout. That can't happen. They're lucky. It's week one, and this is easily correctable. But there was some there was some sloppiness to that game. It is amazing that they put up 31 points and 31 in offense.
Yeah.
With all these problems.
Well, it was the fourth preseason game for both coaches, right? Because I love Dave Phipp for his aggressiveness. I still think the idea to try to an onside kick at that moment in the game was not smart. Didn't Dan Campbell take a timeout at the end of the first half that helped the Eagles kind of score at the end there? Going into halftime?
I don't remember.
I thought I remember Dan Campbell taking a timeout on purpose, thinking he was going to get the ball back when then the Eagles went and scored. I just, both teams could have done some better job there.
Give Michael Clay, who's the special teams coach, that's his responsibility to make sure everybody's lined up. Because generally the way it works is when a team's going to do a surprise onside, they see a tell. They see something wrong with the opponent's special teams alignment. Well, there wasn't any on that play, and they had it was incredible. Zach McPherson, I mean, they had the thing covered perfectly.
Yep.
It was like, almost like they were ready for it.
Well, Nick Sirianni said that they practiced it this week in practice, and McPherson came up with the clean grab on it. So that,
so very good job there. Yeah. Britton Covey had one good return. When I call it good, anything over like Greg Ward calling a fair catch is good.
He had an 11-yard return. That was good.
Quez
Watkins does not look like he's. And then listen, it's just week one.
Yeah,
and he hasn't done it, but he did not look. He's a very elusive, speedy guy, but that didn't translate when he had kickoff return duties. It just didn't look right for him.
No, he's got work to do. You're absolutely right with that.
All right, so next week, Monday night, is the Eagles versus the Vikings. So does that mean we're on Tuesday?
We should be on Tuesday from 6 to 8. We'll confirm that.
Okay.
Follow us on Twitter, but almost certain, because that's what we did last year. And yeah, because there are no Sixers or Flyers conflicts until October, so we're clean there. And that will be, look, this will be a more competitive game. It's obviously the home opener.
Mm-hmm.
Both teams are 1-0.
Yep.
Kirk Cousins had some amazing games against the Eagles, particularly with Washington, but in 2018, when John T. Filippo was the OC,
he killed them.
Oh my gosh! I talked to John about this. He called a bomb from like their own two.
Yep.
And I remember talking to John that week. I was like, "Dude, what were you thinking?" He goes, "Because he's like, I believe in Kirk, and I thought we can do it. And he did it. He threw a bomb down the right sideline."
Yeah.
So that'll be a good one. That'll be a fun game. The fans will be out of their minds for that national television with all these expectations. And by the way, the Eagles are now the favorite to win the NFC East because they weren't. Dallas was leading up to the regular season. And Dallas now is number four in division. They're like plus 600. It's hilarious.
I will not rule out the Dallas Cowboys from still winning this division. What's that going to be out? 5 weeks, probably?
Well, it'll be at least six because he had to have surgery.
Jalen Reagor had that same kind of surgery when he broke his finger. Do they have the bye week in there?
It's on the thumb. It's also on the thumb. Here's my question to you is, though, are you still picking Washington? I know you picked Washington.
No, last year I picked Washington.
Oh, you picked Washington.
This year I picked Dallas. Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, so
they look terrible.
You can see how good
Tampa's
my practices
defense
are.
Was incredible last night.
Tampa's defense was very good. Yeah, Dallas did not look good, even when Dak was healthy. Again, week one, so we'll see what goes on. I guess we'll see what Cooper Rush is made of. But the division, ironically, is 3-1, and the three wins came from the Eagles, the Giants with that huge comeback win, that gutty win there, and Washington. Carson Wentz has some weapons out there. Curtis Samuel, McLaurin, and Jahan Dotson, my guy Jahan Dotson, all score touchdowns.
He was incredible. Boy, Jahan Dotson, that second touchdown catch from Wentz was tremendous.
That was a go-get-it play. I loved it.
Yep.
So I'm doing that at Penn State a billion times.
And he won with leverage on that route, and they are really loaded on offense.
They are.
Not a very good offensive line. The Eagles clearly have better talent, but they can score. Boy, the Giants, and how about the Giants before we get out of here? What an unbelievable one. They were getting their tuchus handed to them. I guess I could say that on the Fanatic.
You can.
And they came back. What an unbelievable. And Saquon Barkley for you Penn Staters, he was all the way back. He put the team on his back yesterday. He was incredible.
Good day for Penn State skill position players. Jahan Dotson, right. Saquon Barkley. Did Mike Gesicki do anything for the...
No?
Okay. Well, I wasn't expecting much in that offense for him anyway. But Freiermuth for the Steelers
had a
big game.
Yep.
So always good to see. Unfortunately, Chris Godwin probably came back a little too soon. I know he had a hamstring injury in that game. But we'll see. Division 3-1. Pretty hard to believe after week one. We will be back next Tuesday night. Thanks, everybody, for calling. Thanks to Fanatic. Thanks to Tyler Zulli doing a great job. And, of course, keep it here for Devon Givens, for Adam Kaplan. I'm Jeff Mosher. You've been listening to Inside the Birds Radio, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.